Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Wednesday, the 20th of March. Today, I'm joined by Megan Owen, who is a competition winner. Hi there, Megan, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Marvellous. So today we've got really, really good subject today, as always, of course. So, Megan, which story did you pick out from today's Watson's Daily?
So today I'd like to talk about Hong Kong passing tougher new security laws.
Yep.
And I'd like to talk about this for a number of reasons, because I think it will have an impact on a lot of different areas.
Right.
So one area that I think it will impact is...
Actually, we need to say what is the new, you know, what is the new law, actually?
Oh, sorry, yeah. So they've passed a new security law that will come into effect on Saturday. And it increases the maximum penalty for sedation.
Sedition. Because sedation is slightly different, because that'll be sending you to sleep. So maximum penalty for sedition, which I have to say, I had to look up in the dictionary when I was reading this. But anyway, that's the sedition is the creation of revolt, disturbance, or civil unrest. So sorry, carry on.
And I was just going to say that it increases the penalty from 2 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. And it includes things like state secrets. And it's also going to like affect espionage mm-hmm. as well. So I was going to say that it'll have a number of impacts on Hong Kong and also globally. So the first one is that it will impact the European Court of Human Rights, because obviously it's impacting freedom of speech mm-hmm. because it's becoming a criminal offence to discuss kind of like any state secrets and like any espionage and stuff. And this is obviously an Article 10 right. Because you should have the freedom of expression and freedom of speech. So this will obviously impact a number of countries, because many countries don't agree with how Hong Kong is restricting these freedoms. And this will cause a number of like jurisdiction problems, because they'll have to be like, more people will be claiming that Hong Kong laws are breaching their Article 10 rights. So then obviously the European Court of Human Rights will be getting involved more and trying to get like citizens of Hong Kong freedom and like compensation for the breaches of these rights. But obviously this is just one issue, and it's kind of only impacting the people in Hong Kong. Whereas on like a more global basis, it's also going to cause political unrest, because many Western countries don't approve of it. For example, the UK and the US don't approve of Hong Kong bringing out more tougher laws that are restricting people. And obviously this could cause problems in the future. It means that they won't be as united. And then in terms of businesses, it will impact, because any businesses that are in Hong Kong at the minute might feel that they need to move locations or kind of think about how they're going to tackle this problem, because they're not going to feel like they can operate as a business fully because they'll be worried about like being found guilty under these new laws. And it's also going to impact particularly like the finance and investment banking industries because like they won't be able to like communicate effectively with other countries, because the Hong Kong like data will be kept a secret, and if they do like communicate this, then it's effectively breaking this new law. So then as well, I feel like it could make like trade and startup businesses quite uncertain in Hong Kong for the future, because businesses that want to expand won't want to choose Hong Kong as like a location anymore, because there's just too many kind of like legal impacts on the business, and it can kind of affect the trade, because Hong Kong's relations now with certain countries will be like their reputation will be tarnished, which means that people might want to cut out Hong Kong like in the trade cycle altogether. And that's all that I've thought about it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a nightmare for Hong Kong. I hope I'm not being too extreme in my sort of interpretation of this, but it seems to me that the authority, you know, the Chinese authorities have been chipping away at Hong Kong with on the legal side of things, in particular, because remember that, you know, obviously this there was the security law, and then the whole the pro-democracy protest that really reached sort of fever pitch just before COVID hit. Then you actually at that point you had, I think, Boris Johnson had brought in special visas for people from Hong Kong who wanted to come to the UK. You then had, you know, fast forward a few years, and then you had the raids by the authorities on companies like Bain & Co. and other sort of management consultancy firms, where they just raided the place and then just turned around and said, you know, there's too much confidential information here. We think you're indulging in corporate espionage, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then that has sort of led to a lot of corporate paranoia there as well. So then you've had law firms and all sorts of firms who have, I mean, I think you've had law firms, private equity firms and things who are ring fencing their Hong Kong businesses so that they can't be accused of, or they are less likely to be accused of, corporate espionage and data leakage and all that kind of thing, as well as, you know, the desire by these corporates to stay in Hong Kong despite increasingly tight US sanctions. So, but this seems to me to just almost like, you know, Hong Kong is hanging off a ledge, right, on a high building, and China is coming along with big heavy boots and is basically just about to stamp on the feet, stamp on the hands of, you know, of Hong Kong that's hanging on to this ledge, and then we'll watch it fall off the building. That's what it feels like to me. I mean, I know people with a lot of experience in the region and in Hong Kong specifically, and I will, you know, if I do hear anything from those sources, I will let you know what their interpretation is. And I also know someone who owns their own management consultancy business over there, which but I don't think I could get anything from them, because if I ask, I don't know if I'll be able to get an honest answer online. You know, I'd have to actually see that person and have a confidential chat. And the thing is, that to me is wrong, you know, well, certainly from a Western point of view, because you think, well, I should be able to sort of say, hey, what do you reckon? Is this, because I do think this is the end of Hong Kong it's been, for Hong Kong, I think it's been the death of a thousand cuts. But I do feel that this could be the final cut that just completely marginalizes Hong Kong as a hub for, finance and business. I mean, just imagine, right, if you are if you're working at an investment bank, you're a financial analyst, and let's say you're covering, I don't know, the electric vehicle industry, right? And you think that it's going to be disastrous, and because the economy is going downhill and all that sort of thing, you might not be able to say that. You know, last year, remember, the authorities actually told banks and things not to say negative things about the economy. The authorities also, they stopped publishing job unemployment figures, for instance, as well, because they don't want people to think, or observers to make negative or gain negative conclusions about the state of the economy. So there's just more and more interference by the Chinese state, and I feel that this is just a case of them continuing to just push down or eliminate any resistance until eventually Hong Kong just gives up and just is subsumed into China. And whether or not Hong Kong is going to ever then be a hub again, or whether a new hub appears, I don't know. But I mean, it just feels, it feels very scary it from where I'm sitting now. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's from what I can see of this and what I've seen, obviously, of what the impact of the security law that was brought in 2020, it's not looking good. And I would have thought that the places that are going to do well out of this will probably be Singapore and Tokyo. And I think I've said this in a previous podcast, that I think that Singapore, I would say, should edge it as a place to do business, although there have been problems in Singapore with, say, Western businesses going over there and their employees acting, shall we say, not in a nice manner, and, you know, being paid way more than locals and driving the prices of things up, and, you know, or just generally being very obnoxious indeed. Not everyone, obviously, but there has been a reputation of that happening in Singapore, which they're cracking down on. But anyway, Singapore is still, I think, a reasonable place. Whereas Tokyo, and I say this as a half Japanese person, I've worked for Japanese companies, I've worked in Japan, and I would suggest that Japan is a difficult place to do business, especially if you're starting from scratch, you know, or, you know, you don't have presence there already. You know, there are so many unwritten rules. It takes ages to get, you know, to get to know everyone, and you have to know everyone and, you know, get in the network. You're not going to just rock up on day one, or it's highly unlikely you'll rock up on day one and the business comes through the door. It's just not going to be like that, because Japan has been the graveyard of many a European and US company who've tried and failed to do well there. But I would have thought that the Japanese government will want to encourage any businesses that want to move from Hong Kong to Japan. But like I say, I would suggest that as things are at the moment, if I was a business, I would probably go to Japan, because I know about Japan and all that. But if I wasn't, I would go to Singapore. But anyway, bit of a rant. But I just, you know, I'll keep an eye on this, because this is a really important thing, because this all feeds into that whole kind of theme that I've been talking about before, about the shifting sands of geopolitics at the moment. And this is really a really big thing in the Asian region. So long answer to the question, what do you think, Peter, on this? But there you go. Do you have any further thoughts on this?
I don't think so. I think you've covered everything.
I've ranted enough. Okay, so look, we'll move on to the next thing. So my sort of topic of the day is really all about Unilever deciding to separate out their ice cream business, which includes Wool's and Magnum and Ben and Jerry's. Big fan of Magnum's myself. Ben and Jerry's, okay. It sounds like this is a good strategic thing to do. The ice cream business, I mean, it's got something like in Unilever's ice cream business, they've got five of the 10 world's top, five of the 10 top ice cream businesses in the world. Something like that. So something like that. It's amazing. Also, it is a bit weird, the ice cream business, in the sense that it has to have its whole sort of separate supply chain, because everything has to be cold, obviously. And, you know, and the other thing is, I think that Unilever has had issues. Unilever has had issues, you know, so they stretch back a few years. Some of it is due to, I mean, they have a sort of a listing, I mean, in London and Amsterdam. There was a move at one stage to ditch the London listing and just go to Amsterdam, but there was massive resistance to that. Then after that, there were questions asked about whether the management was, you know, the right management, if they couldn't convince people to do what they wanted. Then that then shines a light on all the businesses that are under its umbrella, which there are vast numbers of brands under the Unilever name. And so this is, I guess, a bit of a crowd pleaser. They're going, okay, we're going to get rid of this business. They say that that's a strategic thing. I suspect that what they will do is they'll try and find a buyer. I would have thought that they will keep a chunk themselves. So let's say they keep 20% and they sell 80% of the business, so that if things go incredibly well, they will, you know, still be able to take part in some of the upside. But it means that they don't have control over the business and they can wash their hands of it to an extent. The sort of impact of this is, okay, this is Unilever getting rid of their ice cream business, but they've got so many other businesses as well. So why not ditch all the ones that are quite pedestrian in terms of growth profile? But then on the other side to that, you could say that, you know, the whole idea of having this kind of conglomerate type structure is that you even out earnings volatility over time by having presence in different product categories that do well at different points in the economic cycle. But what do you think? Do you think that it's good to separate out ice cream?
So obviously there's like a number of different things that it will impact. I think it, like, a downside is obviously cutting the 7,500 jobs, because obviously we're in a cost of living crisis. Like, it's bad enough for people as it is, and like to have their jobs cut is just going to cause further like economical problems for the country. But then I think for Unilever it is good, because it's better, in my opinion, to try and have like a unique selling point. And obviously they're an established business, so they're not like needing to have a unique selling point. But again, I think the cost of living crisis is impacting how like businesses like are selling and their profit margins and stuff. So I think in these times it's kind of better to focus on like areas where they can like put more into it and then get a higher growth out of it. Because like you said, obviously the ice cream like industry is quite hard to maintain, because you need a separate supply chain because of the cold temperatures. So I think they are better off kind of like just focusing on other areas.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see, won't we? I mean, I feel that you know, I just wanted to say, because we talked about this earlier, is that I think that, you know, it is fair to say that conglomerates, you know, whether conglomerates are favoured or not, does, you know, it changes over an economic cycle. And so at some stages, it's seen as I was saying, it's seen as a good thing to have a broad range of businesses, because it means that your earnings over time are less volatile, because if one area is doing well, another area is not doing so well, you know, it can't, they kind of even each other out over time. But then there are other times, and actually what happens at that usually at that point is that the company acquires other businesses because maybe there's been a downturn and they can pick up some assets at reasonable values and merge them with their own and that sort of thing. On the other hand, you know, when things they're you know, at another point in the economic cycle, everyone will say, oh no, you've got to focus on this one area or just three areas or whatever it may be and jettison the rest. Now, those things aren't always right at all points of the economic cycle, but it does seem to me that Unilever has had a tough few years in terms of leadership and strategy and all that kind of thing. So maybe this is the right thing to do now. Whether or not it's right to further split itself up, I'm not sure. I mean, could it sell individual brands? Could it shift some of those? Maybe. I don't know. But anyway, I think the argument here and what it was saying in today's papers was that it could be ice cream today and, you know, personal care or something tomorrow. So we'll see how it goes. But at the moment, Unilever seems to be reacting to outside pressure. You know, and I think that the ice cream business is a decent place to start. Yeah. So, yeah, do you have anything you want to add?
Not from me.
Okay. Well, that's worth going out for an ice cream now. but anyway, well, look, thank you very much, Megan, for your insight today. Thank you very much for listeners for listening. As always, massively appreciate it. If you do like this podcast, please, you know, rave about it in a positive way. You know, online and stuff, that'd be great. And we'll bring more to you very soon. So hopefully we're back tomorrow. And yeah, many thanks. Have a great day. Bye.